This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. This is our final segment for today, day number four of the Alex Murdaugh murder trial. Let's go to the courtroom and pick it up as they get back in.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. For the record, we're resuming with the publishing of State's Exhibit 243, and we're picking up at 36 minutes and 15 seconds in the video. I'm actually going to back it up 10 seconds just since we took a break.
You know, her mom and dad were in there, and I just took all the guns to the back room. But that's after the fact.
Were those guns have been in the room, in the gun room, when we came up there with John?
I can't remember exactly when y'all came, but probably. I think y'all came a little bit, because it was a good while before y'all came.
Let me ask you one thing right here. You had earlier shown some body cam footage of your search of the gun room. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Ultimately, that day on June 8th, 2021, did agents also go to other areas of the residence to look for any other firearms that fit the description or fit the caliber of the two weapons from the murder scene?
Yes, sir, they did.
And by two weapons, I should say two calibers from the murder scene.
Yes, sir.
And that would be 300 blackout and 12 gauge.
That's correct.
Right. So ultimately, these weapons that were seized, those are the only ones recovered matching those two calibers.
That's correct. Right. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was probably 2 o'clock or so that afternoon before we got here.
Now, did y'all keep any guns out at the kennels?
We didn't keep guns out there, but there were always guns out there.
Okay.
You know? I mean, and I'm going to be honest with you, we were all a little bit bad about it, but Paul was the worst. You know, he was the worst.
He would leave a gun out there?
He would leave anything anywhere. And, you know, it was not unusual for there to be guns out there.
Did y'all take the...
But, like, I can tell you that, I mean, they told me that the 300 blackout was used in this. That 300 blackout, you know, it was not out there.
So y'all didn't use that for target practice, or he didn't have it out there with them on Monday?
No.
Okay. No, that's right, because it was in the house.
What did the defendant tell you about whether or not there was a 300 blackout present at the kennels on the night of the murders?
He said it was not out there.
So Paul said that one was stolen or lost, and it was some time ago. Was that reported anywhere?
It wasn't officially reported because I wasn't totally convinced it was stolen.
Okay.
You know, as opposed to lost. But, I mean, you know, I mean, there were people told about it.
Yeah.
I know that I told John Bedingfield about it. I know that I told some other local officers about it, you know, just in case it turned up in a drug thing.
Okay.
But I didn't do an official report.
Okay. The two that you bought for the boys, that each one of them had one, and the one Paul lost, is that the only ones that you have?
Well, I'm gonna tell you this. I thought that Paul got another one replaced, but Buster said we didn't, but I was certain that we did. But, I mean, my memory is it's been gone for a substantial while, too.
Long pause. What did Alex Murdaugh, the defendant over there, tell you about the third blackout?
To his memory, it had been gone for a substantial amount of time, too.
Do you remember anything about them as far as, were they the same colors?
They were identical except for colors.
Okay.
Who had, did, which one was Buster's?
Buster's the one we still have. Paul's the one that lost his.
Okay. What were the two colors?
Black and tan. Buster's is black, Paul's was tan.
Okay. And you say you thought you replaced it after he lost it for another one.
But
Buster says you didn't.
I believe that we did.
Okay.
I mean, there'll be a record of that, won't it?
Should be, yes, sir.
I know we replaced it. But, you know, I know we replaced it because I wouldn't replace it again. Maybe I just think that now. I don't know. But I'm certain we replaced it.
Have you talked to CB Rowe since Monday or Tuesday?
Yes, sir.
Because I know we talked about what he had done on the farm. Is he still employed?
He's still employed because I got to have somebody keeping it clean. But I can't keep him. I mean, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I told you, I don't know why that story seemed important to me the other night.
Yeah.
I really can't see CB Rowe doing, I just can't. I really do not believe that.
Well, it's an odd story.
It's a messed up story.
And, you know, and I just, being in law enforcement for so long and working these type cases, and I don't know the Islington area, but talking to Collin County and seeing the property and how isolated it is, finding somebody that's just going to randomly come up there that late at night that doesn't know the property, you know, that's so. Of course, I have to look within and then start working my way out.
So you feel like it's not random. You feel like it's intentional. I mean, planned.
I don't know what to feel right now. And I hate to say that. I don't know what to feel right now.
So do y'all have any good clues?
All of the evidence that we collected Tuesday morning, and we collected additional evidence on Tuesday afternoon. They've collected evidence at autopsy today. So we're trying to put a rush on that to get an answer quick. And hoping that's going to tell us something.
By evidence, I mean, is it things you think are going to be helpful?
Well, I mean, the shot shells out there, the casings, the DNA swabs that we took from the door handle to see if anybody touched the door handles, any other places that we think somebody may have touched while they were out there. You know, we're trying to collect DNA from that and analyze that. Which at the conclusion of this, what I'm going to also ask is that we get a buccal swab, a DNA swab from you.
No problem.
Your DNA is going to be there, yeah. But we need to eliminate it once it's developed. So, you know,
we don't need that unknown when it actually is a family member.
For no problem.
I mean, we have talked to close to 100 people trying to track people down, and we're still tracking people down. And that's why, you know, who Paul was with.
I want to tell you one thing while I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Paul was really an incredibly intuitive little dude.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was like a little detective. And, I mean, Paul would, you know, what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Which leads me to, let's go back to Paul right quick while we're on him. So we have his phone. Do you know his passcode?
I don't. And I'm going to tell you this right now. There's a few people I can point you to.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that he was super, super, super secretive with that, I mean, cell phone. I asked his brother if he knew it. Did the ones that they got the other day didn't
when y'all work? Did y'all get any the other day?
Not for Paul's phone.
No. Okay. I know they got Maggie's code.
I know Maggie.
Yeah.
And it works. Or it worked.
Yeah.
I've not gotten it, but there's a lot of people out moving parts that, you know, may have gotten that information. So we'll follow up on it. If you believe somebody gave us a code for Paul's, a possible code for Paul's?
You know, maybe it was Maggie's. I don't know.
Okay.
But I'll find out. I will try to find out Paul's code. Yeah. But it will surprise me greatly if somebody knows it.
I mean, certainly, you know, talking about the investigation, certainly we're looking at every angle, trying to figure out what fits. And we're talking to, you know, people that were involved in the boat case. We're trying to track down people that Paul knew and were friends with. That's why I asked who he was in Charleston with, so we can go try and see if they might know something or try to figure something out. We're trying to get into his phone to see if there's any information, see if he got like a direct threat from somebody there. I mean, the people that are here are not the only ones working on this. We've got people out doing things right now.
Thank you.
I mean, we're trying to pull everything in. Just the area, Islington, unfortunately, there's not a lot of people moving around. I mean, I've got somebody looking at videos right now back at the office, coming through hours of videos that we've gone out and collected.
Well, thank y'all.
Yeah.
Very much.
So.
Mr. Allen.
You don't have to call me, miss. You just call me. Sorry. Like, thank you for that.
When you and Paul got back to the house, Miss Maggie's there, and y'all eat supper, which has been prepared, and you said you laid down and took a little nap, and when you got up, Maggie and Paul was gone, or did they leave when you laid down?
I believe that. I'm not sure.
But they weren't there when you woke up around the 9 o'clock mark or so when you made the call to Maggie to let her know you were going to your
house. No, nobody was in that house when I left.
So, and just trying to narrow that, the last time that Paul and you saw Paul and Maggie's when y'all were eating supper.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
You asked the defendant, when was the last time he saw Maggie and Paul? What did he tell you?
When he was eating supper.
Until you came back from your mom's. And
yes, sir.
Found what you found.
Yeah, and Alex probably told y'all this. He did check for a poll.
Yes. Right. And that's why we want to do the DNA.
Right. Right. I don't know.
Yes.
When you tried to turn Paul over, do you know if you tried to turn him like towards the kennels or away from the kennels? And his phone fell out.
Away. I think I turned him away. Okay.
Was he left-handed or right-handed?
He was right-handed.
Where did he normally keep his phone?
I don't. I mean, usually in his hand.
But the defendant was asked during this interview where Paul normally kept his phone. What did he say?
Usually in his hand.
I mean, it was, you know, it was always on him, pocket, hand, truck.
Where did Maggie carry her phone? Anywhere she could?
Yes, sir. Did y'all get fingerprints on her phone?
I haven't gotten that back yet.
When Paul's phone came out, did you just pick it up and put it on, you know, place it back down on him, or?
You know, yeah, I did not try to open it or anything. You know, I don't know how I had in my mind that I needed to not mess anything up. I had that, you know, somehow I had that presence of mind that I needed to not mess anything up. And so, I tried not to.
And you definitely saw a traumatic picture, and I know it's not hard, or not easy. I know it's hard. And sitting there talking today is tough.
It was just so bad. I did it so bad.
You asked the defendant about a traumatic picture that he saw of Paul and Maggie. What did he say?
It's just so bad. I did him so bad.
I did him so bad.
Yes, sir.
He's such a good boy, too. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But you know, the little things that we've
got, I understand,
is necessary. So that we can get a little better picture as to you know, to what may have happened.
Well, I just thank y'all for everything, you know. Yeah. My in-laws, I would like somebody to update me or my brother or somebody so that I can tell them as y'all discover things. Unless for some reason y'all don't do that.
Well,
I mean, they just have so many questions.
I understand. And
I mean, they may even, well, no, they don't.
Well, I mean, I know Maggie's mother just had a knee replacement. How was their health overall other than that?
You know, they're ailing a little bit. They're getting on up there. Daddy has some neuropathy, but I mean, they're in good physical health. They're in good, you know, their fortitude is good. They're just, you know, they're just getting age on them, you
yes,
know?
Sir. Yes, sir. are they in Somerville or are they at the house on Mozilla?
No, they live in Somerville.
Okay.
But they're here now.
Oh, they're here in this house?
No, they're in Moselle.
Okay. Because, I mean, I'll go by and speak with them and meet with them if you think that would help.
I think that would help a tremendous amount if you would just be willing just to sit down and let them, I mean, you know, hearing from me and John Marvin and Danny and whoever, what little tidbits y'all get. I just, you know what? I think it would give them peace of mind to know that y'all got a team of people out there on it.
Yes, sir.
And you know, just to really have something, you know, a tangible person instead of being told.
You got a contact number for them?
Yeah, I'm getting ready to get that.
Okay.
Good.
What are their names?
My father-in-law's name is Terry. My mother-in-law's name is Kennedy. And they're Brandstatters. And my sister-in-law, who
spell Brandstatter for me.
B-R-A-N-S-T-E-T-T-E-R. And then my sister-in-law, who was closest to Maggie in the whole world, mm-hmm. Is Marion Proctor. And her husband is Bart Proctor. And they live in Charleston.
Do you have a contact number for any?
I know their numbers.
Okay.
843.
Your Honor, at this time, I'm going to mute the video with consent of the defense just so that that number is not broadcast.
Yes, Your Honor, we agree.
Person in the world with in-laws. I mean, yeah. They are wonderful.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, it's my in-laws that I like. It's my wife's in-laws I don't.
There you go.
Let me grab a piece of paper. I'll be right back.
Another contact number is given, I believe, with consent of the defense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Me to dig them up.
And David, I'm gonna forward you this card. Maybe you don't want me doing it right now, but someone sent me Will's Chapman's
number that I just gave us. Victim's advocate, Miss Marion Walker.
Thank you.
That's her cell number.
Thank you.
There's some information for you on the back. In the Victim's Advocate program, they help with different things. I think more specifically, what would be more beneficial, especially for you and Buster, is some counseling down the road, grief counseling.
You know, I do some assistant solicitor's work.
Yeah.
So,
you're familiar with it.
Familiar with the thing. But thank you so much.
There was a discussion about Victim's Advocate. What did Mr. Burr tell you about his career?
that he did some assistant solicitor's work, and he was familiar with the program.
And again, what is an assistant solicitor?
He's a prosecutor which prosecutes criminal offenses.
Okay. Criminal prosecutor?
Yes, sir.
I know y'all planned out the funeral today. When is the funeral?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We're doing a service tomorrow. Maggie and Paul aren't going to be ready until next week. So we're doing service tomorrow, and then we're going to have a private family thing one day next week.
Okay. Are y'all doing anything tonight? Because I can run by and talk to Terry and Kennedy tonight.
I think the sooner you can come and talk to them, the peace of mind that would really help them.
Okay.
That's convenient for you. So we're out at the house tonight, but and if for some reason they go back early because of the service tomorrow, they may be staying tonight. They may not be. I'm not sure. Yeah. All of their cousins and family on the Branstetter side and the Hubbard side is coming in from Kentucky. And so they may be going back to stay with them.
Okay.
I'll find out and call you. I think you called me.
Yes, sir.
On this date of this interview on June 10th, 2021, to your knowledge, had there been another death in the family?
At this point, it had not.
Okay. Was there one not long after this?
Yes, it was.
And who died?
Mr. Alex's father.
And what was his name?
Randolph.
Jim's got my number.
Okay. I'll find out and call you in just a minute.
Okay. All right. Do you have any other questions that I might be able to answer right now that we hadn't gone over?
No, sir.
As soon as I get something, and if it's okay with you, John Marvin asked me to go through him.
That's fine.
So I'm not bothering you in case you're doing something. What time is the service tomorrow?
12 o'clock.
Okay. Where is that going to be?
Hampton.
What, at a church or?
It's Graveside.
Okay. So if I get something around that time, I won't bother you. I'll wait 1:30. And
if you get anything important, you can call me anytime.
Okay.
Anytime.
Okay. Are y'all going to publicize the service, or is it just going to be for family and friends?
No, sir. It's going to be, it's going to be open, but I got TC and those making sure there's no, I don't want any press anywhere near.
Yeah.
So,
they don't deserve to be near.
They're going to make sure, in the town of Hampton, that, there's no press.
Okay. All right. Well, y'all got my numbers.
I think you said with that phone. It'll take a while.
I'm gonna go check on it. Y'all go back in the house. When it's done, I'll bring it to you.
Let me do the.
Oh, the buckle, yes. Let's do the buckle swab right quick. Right.
You can sit where you at, Alex. And I'm going to step out, but I got glove up.
Oh, what?
The buckle.
There was a question asked about, do you think he's through with that phone? What were they talking about?
Mr. Alex's phone, which he had given to us to do a download on.
And who was doing that download again?
Dylan Hightower.
And that was occurring while this interview was going on?
Yes, sir.
Now you're discussing the buckle swab, is that correct?
That is correct, yes, sir.
The buckle swab,
Do I need to spit out my tobacco?
It might be better, sir. Yeah.
I'll get everything together.
I'm doing the consent now.
That's fine, I'm going to go ahead and... Where's your gloves at?
You didn't grab gloves?
I did not, but I know one of these vehicles got gloves. I'm not in my.
Well, this point, the video, we're at 1 hour and 2 minutes. What happens next? What if anything, are you about to do?
I'm fixing the glove up. I'm going to secure the cotton swabs, the sterile cotton swabs, and getting ready to do the buccal swab.
And who do you do the buccal swab of?
On Alex Murdoch.
And the person you've been describing as Alex, the person you interviewed, do you see him in the courtroom here today?
Yes, sir, I do.
Can you identify him for the jury,
please? He's sitting at the defense table with the, looks like navy blue blazer on.
Right, on the record reflect, he's identified the defendant. Thank you. I'm going to show you real quick what's been marked as State's Exhibit 157 and see if you recognize that.
Yes, sir, I do.
All right, and can you tell the jury what that is?
That is the buccal swab which I collected from Mr. Alex Burdock.
And this time I would offer States in 157 into evidence, I believe, without objection.
Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'll do it.
This is the buccal swab you took that day that's on the video?
Yes, sir, it is.
After that, where did that buccal swab go?
It was turned over to crime scene and went to the lab for testing.
And is it general practice with any sort of evidence like this to secure it from any tampering while it's turned over to crime scene?
Yes, sir, it is.
And the writing on the back of this evidence slip, whose writing is that?
That would be David Owen, and he collected by Jeff Croft.
All right, thank you. I'm going to show you what's been marked as States 218, States 219, States 220. And just generally see if you recognize those particular documents.
Yes, sir, I do.
And generally, what are those?
Property receipts for items that were seized during the searches at the residence.
That you previously described to this jury?
Yes, sir.
Firearms evidence and the like?
That's correct.
Your Honor, this time the state would move 218, 219, and 220 into evidence, I believe, without objection.
Submitted. There. I'm going to show you what's been marked as States Exhibit 156, and I'm going to get you to pull out your, in fact, though, if the clerk, y'all have a pair of scissors I can borrow real quick?
Oh,
All right, I'm going to show you what's been marked as State's Exhibit 156. And I'm going to ask you, if you could, to open the sealed pouch at the top so we can see what's inside, if you could, please. All right, now I'm going to ask you to hold on to that one. I ask you to return these back into that pouch if you could, please. I'm going to put 156 on this particular exhibit, and can you tell the jury, if you recognize that, what that is, please?
That is the buccal swab that was collected from Rogan Gibson.
Did you collect that buccal swab?
I did.
Did Rogan consent to that buccal swab?
He did.
And did you secure it from any tampering and turn it over to crime scene?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, this time I would move States 156 in evidence, I believe, without objection.
No objections.
You're admitted, or it's admitted without objection.
I'm going to show you what's been marked as States 155. Identification at this time, see if you recognize this particular item.
Yes, sir, I do.
And tell me generally what that is, please.
It's a property receipt for the buccal swab that I took from Mr. Alexander Murdoch.
And that's the one from the video that has been played for the jury?
Yes, sir, it is.
This time, Your Honor, I can move States 155 into evidence, I believe, without objection.
Okay. Submit it.
First indulgence, 1 moment. Your Honor, that will conclude the State's direct examination of Special Agent, Senior Special Agent Crawl.
And I think we will call it a day and start at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Please do not discuss the case.
That wraps up day number 4 of the trial of Alec Murdaugh from the courtroom. Thank you guys for joining us. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any breaking updates and conversations on this case. Have some interesting ones that we'll be posting between now and tomorrow's coverage of the case. Wherever you download podcasts, just hit that subscribe or follow button. You can even try it commercial free on Apple Podcasts right now and even try that for 3 days free. Until next time, for all of us here at True Crime Today, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to our continuing coverage of the trial of Alec Murdaugh.